Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden and have another wonderful guest with me today. I got Mr. Mark Gallagher, and we are going to talk some Kenpo and talk some martial arts and get into his story. I usually start things off by just giving a quick rundown of my history. I formally started training martial arts in the early 90s, and taken a multiple amount of martial arts at this point, with my core systems being Kenpo and Capoeira, but I've also done and am doing Muay Thai and Hapkido and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've done some boxing also, so I stay pretty busy, but yeah, we're going to turn it over to Mr. Gallagher here and get into his story. So, yeah, go ahead and fill us in on how the martial arts found you, how Kenpo found you, where did it all start, and we'll just take it to the beginning.
Reggie, first, thank you for having me. Listen to your story for the first time. This is our first time talking. We've only texted a couple times back and forth, so I'm learning everything about you as you're learning about me. We have a similar background, bro. Started training 1991. I was 10 years old. Like any other kid, fascinated. Ninja Turtles, Van Damme, Karate Kid. So that got me in the door. And once I was in the door, just finding life mentors, traveling the country with karate tournaments, just my childhood, my teenage years were just a ball. They were a blast. And it developed into a lifelong martial arts. Early 20s, picked up jiu-jitsu. You know, we'll definitely get into details about, you know, that journey. Received my black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu a couple years ago. Boxing, kickboxing kind of came with karate training at AmeriKick. Our niece, stick and knife fighting, that came with training at AmeriKick. So AmeriKick is a Kenpo school by nature, but the cross training within has developed me into the martial artist that I am today, which is just very open-minded, appreciative of all styles. And my God, I guess we could talk about this for hours, but let's sum it up in the next 45, 60.
very nice. Yeah. That's one of the things that I love about doing this show is that folks like to talk Kenpo, folks like to talk martial arts. And yeah, I think every guest I've had, I make the vow or the invite that we're going to have to do a part two and three and four. And so I like that. It's less work for me. But yeah, I'm curious, since we're kind of similar in our starts. I know for me, getting into Kenpo, I saw a little film that no one's ever heard of called The Perfect Weapon, and that's what got me into Kenpo specifically. So I'm curious, was there one you know, you mentioned the Ninja Turtles and Karate Kid and anything, was there any one thing that pushed you over the edge, or
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna take it back. Probably before Ninja Turtles, there was an old TV show. Everybody knows Ernie Reyes Jr. Ernie Reyes Jr., one of his first roles was a TV show called Sidekick.
Ah, yes, yes.
You ever hear of, or do you remember Sidekick?
Oh, yes. No, I did love that show. It actually started off with a movie called The Last Electric Knight, if I remember correctly. And then that was, I guess, kind of like the pilot or whatever that spun off into the show Sidekicks. Yeah.
Yeah, and what was it? A Detroit cop that was smart, could figure it out.
Yeah.
Through wit and knowledge, but couldn't fight. So we had a little 8-year-old sidekick to come in and beat up criminals and save the day. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to say, well, what's my earliest memory of? I don't know. Like, you look at dates on stuff. Karate Kid was early 80s. would that come out? 84, 83, something 84. Like that. So, I mean, I'm 3 years old. Who knows what I saw first? But if I'm looking back at her earliest memory, that TV show did it for me, man.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. One of my previous guests is Tom Kalos, and he trained with Ernie Reyes Jr. and Sr. for that matter. And he has nothing but just amazing things to say about Ernie Reyes Jr. I mean, he's definitely a legend and is extremely talented and has done many great things over the years. And he's definitely gotten a lot of people into the arts. So
set the platform for how to cross over if you're not named Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, Jet Li. If your name's some guy from some city that you're really good at martial arts, like, this is how you get into movies. This is how you get roles.
Yeah, for sure. So what specifically got you into Kenpo, or when did the Kenpo officially start for you?
We didn't seek out a martial art specific. You know, I told mom I want to do it. Mom did her homework in the neighborhood. She found American martial arts, Dennis Toston, his wife Sharon Toston. I mean, I was so spoiled when I started training there. There was only 3 American schools at the time. So you take 15, 20 head instructors that are spread out now that have their own school. They were all there at the original American on Cottman Avenue in Northeast Philly. And I was just so spoiled with instructors. I spent the majority of my time with Dennis Toston, Mark Russo. They were my 2 main instructors throughout Kenpo. So getting into Kenpo was just by default, not sought after. Once I got into it, I just absolutely fell in love with it. You hear anybody who's been doing Kenpo, they'll say, oh, Kenpo is a very sophisticated martial art. It's a modern martial art. And say that after you've been doing it for 10, 20 years, because within Kenpo, what does sophisticated mean? Why is it modern? And I don't see Kenpo or any martial art as better than another. I just see more original martial arts that were developed and designed prior. And you have straight line theories, you have circular theories, you have off balance theories. And then you have somebody that comes along and says, those are all great theories. Let's put them together into one system. So what I've learned from Kenpo and the passion that I just gained from it early, my instructors taught me that Kenpo is not a closed book, nor is martial arts in general. So accept them, appreciate them, don't deny them. One is not better than the other. This practitioner is better than that practitioner, regardless of style. And I guess what I learned about Kenpo and fell in love with it is how much of an open book it is, which is probably what led you and myself into things like boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, so on and so forth.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, just to kind of make sure that I was clear on the start. So a lot of people start from they were bullied or something like that. For you, it was just purely you were, you know, seeing the media and wanted to get into it, or was there any other?
Wanted to be Van Damme.
yeah. He definitely got a lot of people
Van Damme
in the schools.
Had a good set of abs, and he got all the chicks at a young age. I'm like, that's it. That's the guy. Very I should have nice. Been watching more Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. You know?
No, I'm not much of a sports fan. So the martial arts is perfect for me. All my family, my brothers are all big sports. You know, they did it all: track and baseball and basketball and football and bowling. And I could never get into any of that, and so it was quite a shock for my family once I finally got into Kenpo and doing that. And I think they still kind of scratch their heads when they see that I'm posting things after kind of every class. I use the internet as both a accountability partner and a little kind of training log, and I post what what it is I did that day, and I'm sure when my family see it, they're like, oh my God, like what is this guy doing all the time? Because yeah, you couldn't get me to pick up a ball or a bat or anything when I was young. So
I mean, you get it or you don't. You get it or you don't. It's a frustration reliever. It's meditation. It's a dopamine driver, excitement, and anything in between. If you're having the best day, it's a great day to train. If you're having the worst day, it's a great day to train.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Very nice. So when you got started, did you have difficulty kind of picking things up, or was it did it come fairly easy to you, or? Kind of how were the early days of the training going for you?
I was always athletic. I was always able to jump very high. I was always able to explode off the ground. Never had much grace in me, So being able to pick up on things as a young child. As a teen with athletic ability, I was a bit ignorant to instruction because I could do it. I don't need the reps. I could do it. Which, as we all know, led to a lot of second places. Mm-hmm. and learning that, extra reps get you that first place. Extra reps get you over the hump. I was gifted with speed, good reaction times, explosive jumping ability. I wish I was gifted with a little more patience and knowledge at a young age, because now that the ankles, knees are a bit banged up, a little bit older, I've been forced into gaining knowledge. Here, when you're younger, timing's better than speed. You appreciate it when you lose some speed.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I don't want to say I had difficulty. I wasn't the best. I did have to work as hard as the next guy, but I was definitely gifted with good speed, good explosive jumping ability. I don't hit as hard as the other guy, but I crack real nice. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. I like that. So, did you got into the competing side? When did that start for you? And were you
second I was allowed. My first competition was orange belt. That's maybe 6 months in the training, and just seeing it, being exposed to it. Anybody listening, if you know some old school point fighter names like Bobby Leach, Pedro Xavier, Bobby Harris, these guys were just some of the baddest dudes I've ever seen. And being a kid with starry eyes looking at these just athletes that I've never seen before. I was born and raised in a football house. I chose and loved basketball. I've seen big brute football players. I've seen tall, elegant basketball players. I've seen boxing. I loved Mike Tyson before I did karate. So I've never seen this. The agility of a basketball player, the bruteness of a boxer. And I fell in love with just the competition aspect. But then I wanted to do flips because the guy's doing flips in the other ring. Like, they got everybody cheering. So mm-hmm. I just tried to do a little bit of everything. And, competition, that was right away. Wanted to do it. We'll keep the journey going. But competition went straight through to, mid-30s and stuff. I just stopped competing, karate, jiu-jitsu tournaments just a few years ago. But, yeah, man, that was right away. First time I saw it, I want in. I want this.
Mm-hmm. Now, since you kind of mentioned it, did you get involved in the extreme martial arts competitions as they like to talk about it with the doing the flips and the kind of the crazier moves? I mean, well, I don't know if it's still kind of considered that, but I know when I was coming up that they called that kind of category where you were doing the flips and all the crazy screams and things like that. That was the extreme division or extreme competition division. Did you get into that at
Yeah,
all?
so early 90s, mid 90s again, you and I coming up around the same time. Kind of like the dawn of extreme karate, because you had your traditional forms divisions, your fighting divisions, and then you had your creative forms divisions.
Yeah, there you go.
But
That's the
then
word I was
one day,
looking
some
for.
guy throws a backflip in there. One day, some guy jumps and does two spins instead of one spin. And then they say, hold up, hold up, hold up. We need to put them in their own category. So you and I coming up in around that time, me telling you I wanted a taste of everything. Quick rundown of all the competition. I never did traditional, never got into it, never excited me. So as a youth and as a teen, did the weapons competition, the creative forms competition, did the extremes. I was able to do, the flips and the fancy tricks. Then I saw Hoga fighting one time. These guys were doing Taekwondo style fighting. I said, what's that? And they said, oh, it's Hoga style fighting. And, we're getting ready for the Junior Olympics in Orlando. I'm like, I want to go to Orlando. How do I get there? They said, well, you got to win the state titles. I said, sign me up. So my first competition in Taekwondo was at the state champs up in the Poconos. And I'm just like, what do I got to do? And coach is like, just go run through that division right there. So I smoked this division, was absolutely hated because I was unnamed, no team uniform, no coach, walked in completely dry, uneducated to the rules, and just beat the crap out of everybody in there. Went
Nice.
down to the Junior Olympics thinking it was going to be the same thing. And then I walked into someone else's competition and wasn't quite prepared for that, but got a weekend trip in Orlando, super dope. Took a silver medal in the Junior Olympics there. That was a lot of fun. And then just continued the karate tournaments. Kind of left point fighting, made my way over to continuous fighting because it was like the closest thing to full contact.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed continuous fighting. If anybody's not familiar, instead of the referee stopping on contact, you pretty much do two 90-second rounds and light contact. Continuous fighting is what they call it. So if it's clear that you're going for the knockout, the referee is going to stop the fight, whether disqualification or warning. But it's a rough sparring match versus full contact fighting. So that was a lot of fun. A guy named Donnie Ellickson. You know that name? He's in the tournament world. He's in the
Sounds kind
karate
of
world.
familiar.
So Donnie Ellickson approaches me at a karate tournament one day and says, hey kid, you could fight. I like you. You ever kickbox? I said, nah. He said, you want to? I said, yeah. Who? When? He said, I got a fight for you next week. So my first kickboxing match was on like a 6-day notice. Drove down to King of Prussia somewhere. I looked across the ring and I said, I'm gonna beat the hell out of this guy in like 30 seconds. 30 seconds later, I learned you can't just like dismantle a trained fighter. And then I learned, like, in between rounds, referee comes up and says, yeah, man. And I'm like, hold on, let me catch my breath before you start talking to me. He's like, yeah, if you don't throw X amount of kicks per round, you get disqualified. I said, word? So that's the last kick I threw. I couldn't breathe, man. I thought I was going to die. Which led me into much more formal boxing, kickboxing training. And yeah, you can't just kill a human in 30 seconds. You got to dismantle them over a course of time.
So how was the transition from going from the point fighting and the continuous point fighting to the boxing realm? Was that a difficult adjustment, or be able to fall into it easy, or?
I learned that like anything else, if you're going to be good at something, you got to spend time at it. It was much more casual for me. So in the future, I did a few more casual fights, didn't take the training casually, but kind of understanding like, all right, this is your world. This is not your world. So if you're going to jump in and out of it, get proper training, understand your rules. And if you're going to be serious, be serious. If you're going to be casual, be casual. And you know, just, I've always loved training, boxing. Of all the martial arts and everything I do, boxing is just my favorite one to train. I'm so fascinated with the sport itself. And within learning that, it's just like, stay away from boxers and kickboxers in their ring, in their world, unless you're going to do it full time. That's their world.
I mean, I've done a little bit of boxing. I didn't actually compete. I just went for the training. It was pretty intense and nonstop. As soon as you walk in the door, you're working and you don't stop until class is over. So I can definitely relate to that as kind of a different mindset and just a different way of being when you're training to be that kind of fighter versus doing their self-defense techniques and things like that in your traditional karate school or whatnot. So yeah, I can relate that. So you prefer boxing over kickboxing or?
Love training both. Like I said, when I was a kid, like I loved boxing before I knew what it was. You know, I heard about Muhammad Ali, just heard legendary type stories. Saw Mike Tyson. You know, he wasn't human to me. I didn't read comic books. I didn't do like anything like that. Like Mike Tyson was Superman to me. And there wasn't a human in the world that could like defeat that man. And when I saw him go down against Buster, like, I cried. I don't know if I know why I was crying. I think I saw Superman die on TV. So I've been fascinated with the sport since before I knew what fascination was. Within training karate at AmeriKick, there were some really, really good boxers that cross-trained within there. A guy named Rory Bussey. Rory Bussey is the old school kickboxer. He was out of like the Juniata, North Philly area. And he used to train us in boxing and kickboxing. That was at a very young age. Lost contact with him over a couple of years. Met a guy named Frank. Frank introduced me to a guy named Dennis. And they just cross-trained with a bunch of guys who fought out of Kensington. So there's a bunch of guys that like I trained with. Couldn't tell you their names. But within AmeriKick, cross-training came. So can I tell you I had a formal boxing, kickboxing coach? No. And it's one of the things that I'm actually, you know, heavily looking into and doing much more of at this point in my life. A little more free time, no competitions. I've been looking into much more formal boxing training. Kickboxing, that was just a ton of fun. That never did it as formal as I wanted to. As soon as I get into the formalities of it, again, like, Dan, that's y'all world. You guys have fun. I'll jump in and out with you guys. I'll have fun with you guys. But the everyday, daily kickboxing, like, oh my God, those guys are insane.
Gotcha. So when did the other arts, so you've got the jiu-jitsu and some other arts, when did those start getting part of your training?
I would say I started jiu-jitsu, what year is it, 2025? I don't know. Like, I placed it around when we moved our school. So somewhere around like 06, 07. 06, 07. We were just, my wife and I, Alicia, amazing, the most incredible wife, co-worker, co-owner, amazing. Alicia and I, we were moving the school, and jiu-jitsu was getting very popular in Philly at the time. So we wanted to implement it within our school, whether we were going to bring in an entire program or just a private instructor. We kind of realized that starting a jiu-jitsu program in a karate school with amazing competition within the neighborhood, Balance Studios, Martinez, BJJ, you know, the quality of jiu-jitsu put out in this area, not going to compete with them. Nobody's going to come to a karate school for a jiu-jitsu program. All right, let's get a private instructor in here and somebody just to train me on it, because you are a martial artist in the area. You don't want to be behind in times, whether someone asks you a question and you need a verbal answer or a physical answer. You're a martial artist, so start learning jiu-jitsu. Find a guy named Tim Sylvester. Tim Sylvester, he's a black belt in the Philadelphia area, came up at Maxercise down in Center City. And Tim is just one of the baddest, nicest guys I've ever met in my life. Spent about a year with him privately. He upgraded his life a little bit, got better job opportunities, and was able to, you know, move on a little bit, which unfortunately separated us. But now I'm in love with jiu-jitsu. I don't want to not do it. So asking around, who do I train with? Where do I go? First 10 people I asked, oh, Ricardo Miguelis, Balance Studios. Fast forward, he gave me my black belt 2 years ago. Train with him 2-3 times a week consistently. You ask why? Because you and I are the same cat, man. It was the next big wave, and we had to jump aboard, and we both stayed aboard.
Yeah, I can relate. I actually initially was not super into, I guess I would clarify it as Brazilian jiu-jitsu, mainly because just not kind of wanting to go on the ground. I've always been interested in kind of the grappling aspect as far as things like wrist locks and arm locks. Mostly from a standing position. My first instructor, Wally J, was one of his mentors, and so we got to do some
We'll
really
get back
fun.
to that. Keep going. We'll get back to that.
We got to do some really fun, you know, arm lock stuff and whatnot. And I remember us watching the first UFC and seeing that little guy Hoist Gracie come out, and it's like, what the heck is what is he doing? Like, he can't punch or kick for crap, but he's getting on the ground and putting the hurting on folks. And so there was some interest, and one of my training buddies was training with the Machados back in those days, and he would come in and show us some moves. I'm not sure which rank he had. I mean, he couldn't have been more than a 2 or 3 stripe white belt at that time. But he would show us some moves, and after class we would break out the mats and start rolling around, acting like we knew what we were doing. But now that I'm actually training in jiu-jitsu, I realize that yeah, we did not know what we were doing back then. But now that I've had more Kenpo training and learning more about the principles and the terminology and things like that, it's really helped with understanding jiu-jitsu, understanding Hapkido, understanding the other arts that I've been involved with, and it's also increased my love for not just Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but just the arts in general. Now that I have this different mind, and a different perspective, and that maybe also probably just comes with age, too. But yeah, now I have a just a different appreciation for the arts, and just love soaking them in and getting that training. So yeah, the jiu-jitsu bug, just like the kempo bug and the capoeira bug and the boxing bug, all of those things just get their hooks in, and they're hard to let go. So but I'm fine with that. So you have a story or something related to Wally J? I'm curious to hear
so
this.
So my instructor, Dennis Tosin, the late great Dennis Tosin, he passed just over 2 years ago. He knew everyone. He knew absolutely everyone. And he was a good friend of Wally J. And I've never met Wally J. I've heard a million stories about him. Within the American Kenpo system, we have a handful of techniques that are named Japanese ... fill in the blank. We have a technique that we call Japanese hand, Japanese stranglehold, Japanese finger lock. And every now and then somebody would be like, why is it called Japanese? Or, oh, wait, I thought we trained American Kenpo, but isn't that like a Chinese art, or where's the Japanese come from? And going back to me being spoiled, the cross training within Amerikic, the opportunities that I've had, Sensei Dennis did a lot of small circle jujitsu with Wally J, and the techniques that he's brought into the Amerikic system that have nothing to do with Kenpo. And somebody might raise an eyebrow and say, where did that come from? Why is that in a Kenpo system? I tell stories about this guy, Wally J, that I've never met. He could stand next to me. I wouldn't know who he is. I know his system inside and out. When you said his name, it brought a very big smile to my face. Just because I'm fine. This is our first conversation, bro. We just keep finding out more things we have in common. And my instructor was very fond of the Wally J small circle jujitsu system. And then that brought me to a question in life. Well, I want to do more. How do I get this done? There was a guy, Don Baker. He trained Japanese jujitsu, and he was out of Philadelphia, good friends with Amerikic. So I got to train Japanese jujitsu with him every Saturday morning, probably for about 4 or 5 years. And then it disappeared. I don't know where he went. He moved out of Philly, retired, whatever happened to him. 10, 15 years later, this thing called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu comes up. I'm like, what is this? What is this? And then just hearing the story from how Japanese Jiu-Jitsu developed into Brazilian, or not developed, inspired, and just cross paths, and brings us to this conversation right here. We're two Kenpo guys talking about 10 different martial arts so far, finding a common ground in a Japanese martial art.
Yeah. There's so many things that connect us, and it doesn't matter which arch you're in. We have common ground in all of those. So, it's nice to be able to, I'm a big fan of cross training, and, because there is so much out there to learn, and I love soaking it all in. So I think that's
what makes Kenpo so special, because not only do I truly believe, clearly none of us were there, but I truly believe that Ed Parker cross trained with every system possible. Every time I think I pick up on something new or have an innovative thought, or this instructor, this video says something and it, oh, ding in my head, and I go, oh yeah, you're smart, you know what you're talking about. No, this guy already thought of it. Ed Parker thought of everything. And the way the Kenpo system is physically developed, it's clear that he trained with every style of fighter out there to create Kenpo. And then if you go into the psychology of Kenpo, it is clear that if you read his book and his book alone, you're going to be lost in times. He claims himself as an innovator. He claims himself as one day he'll be outdated. And I think that's why you and I are speaking. I think that's what makes Kenpo physically so special, because it's designed to fight fill-in-the-blank style of fighter, or at least against. We could get into a whole thing about checking height, depth, and width. And somebody asked me, well, what is Kenpo? It's a striking art. But how? You get your strikes available through checking height, depth, width. How long do we got together? But Ed Parker thought of it before everybody else. Ed Parker thought of it after everybody else came up with the concepts that work and said, yep. And if you put these concepts together and these and enhance it this way, that guy thought of everything.
Yeah, Ed Parker was definitely a visionary, definitely ahead of his time, and was definitely didn't drink the Kool-Aid of oh well, my art is the best, or I know it all. He was very, very aware of what else was out there and how to integrate it, how to meld those different things into Kenpo. One of the things that really kind of warms my heart is I've heard from multiple people that knew Ed Parker is that he mentioned having or mentioned that people be exposed to the other arts in particular capoeira. So that is one of my core arts, and from a number of people I've heard that he was going to have like capoeira demonstrations at the tournaments and things like that, and it's like, why, like, this isn't Kenpo? And he's like, well, you should be exposed to these different things in case you encounter it on the street. And I think that's a very forward way of thinking, is opposed to just, oh well, my art can beat anybody. And it's like maybe it can't, but if you have no familiarity with anything else, you can get caught off guard. And I mean, we could argue about the UFC kind of being the early UFC just being a commercial for the Gracies, but that was definitely a wake-up call. They showed up and pulled out their ground game and really kind of made everyone take notice to what they're doing. And that kind of goes back into that whole cross-training. Like, you got to at least be exposed to it to know how to deal with it. So, yeah, he was...
How about this? Gracie Jiu-Jitsu completely changed MMA and the fight world. Just completely changed it to the point where if you don't grapple in some form, you're going to lose, because I'm going to eat your punch or dodge your punch. And once we get to that grapple position, you lose. End of story. You can't debate that. But what did it evolve into? There isn't a striker that goes in that ring that doesn't know how to, at minimum, defend takedowns. I like going back to the Ronda Rousey Holly Holm fight. Mm-hmm. Now, Ronda just did her thing. She ripped through everyone. 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 1 minute, just... And what'd she do? She either ate a punch, dodged one. She got that grip, slam, bang, done. What did Holly Holm do? She didn't grapple her. She didn't wrestle her. She defended against the grappling, which put that grappler in a position of dang, I better learn how to box now, huh? And I think what we get today is a much more, just a much more knowledgeable MMA fighter, to the point of, if you have a scientific boxer, try to explain to a casual fan how good it is. If you have a no-hitter in a baseball game, explain to a casual fan how exciting that is. I think the MMA fighters today are so dang good at everything that it leads to almost nothing sometimes, because it's like, this guy in front of me can punch so good, I better stay out of range. This guy could grapple so good, I don't know if I want to tackle him because his takedown defense is crazy, and that's gonna blow my motor. And man, today's fighter is crazy. And in my opinion, today's winner is the wrestler. The current winner right now is the wrestler. That wrestler that can either eat or dodge your punch, but then has the possibility to maul your jiu-jitsu. Yeah. So jiu-jitsu is going to adapt, and striking is going to adapt. And I love it, man. I love this stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't really follow the MMA stuff as much as I used to, at least as far as like watching the competitions and stuff. But I like how things have evolved, and the first batches of UFC, it was all this, oh well, my style can beat your style, and now that's morphed into MMA is its own thing, and it's not just, oh well, the Shotokan guy can beat the Gojiru guy, and the Kenpo guy can, you know, beat the boxer or whatever. So
hey, Kenpo don't get enough credit for the origin of UFC.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I find, I guess it's kind of funny in that a lot of the people that are not really into jiu-jitsu, and kind of vice versa, the people that think kind of jiu-jitsu is everything. So you have this one camp that's like, oh well, they're not gonna take me to the ground because I'm gonna, you know, punch them out before they get to the ground or whatever. And then you have the jiu-jitsu guys that are, or I should say the grappling guys that are like, oh well, I'll just take this guy down and the striker doesn't have a chance. But a lot of people seem to forget a Kenpo guy, Keith Hackney, did very well in the early UFCs, and
everybody knows the highlight. Nobody knows the name.
Yeah.
Everybody's seen that highlight of that bull with the mullet that jump ridge hand, that 500-700 pound, whatever that sumo wrestler bull was. Like, come on, everybody's seen the highlight. Say his name again. Yeah, he deserves his Keith, tenfold respect.
Keith Hackney, which I have reached out to him on a few occasions. I really would like to get him on the show and chat with him. But yeah, he did very well, even against Hoist Gracie. He did, you know, he did much better than a lot of the other people that went up against Hoist in those early events. So we Kenpo definitely was represented well in those days. And
And then once it evolved and got commercial, like post those OG days, and they got the weight classes and this and that, come on, where am I going next?
You got Iceman,
Chuck Liddell.
Oh yes, yeah. He's another great fighter that's really kind of changed the game for everyone.
And again, not popularly known in the Kenpo world. He's known for knocking people out. Where you think them hands got so nice? Where you think that accuracy got so nice? That timing, the position. He used to hold his hands awkward and wide, and he's the only person that's held his hands like that. Well, if somebody that knows Kenpo is watching that fight and you say, oh, he kind of strikes from point of origin. Any Kenpo guy is going to be like, oh, I get it. Mm-hmm. Casual friend on the couch goes, yeah. The hell are you talking about point of origin? Shut up. I'm watching the fight.
Exactly. And I'll give a shout out to a previous guest, John Hackelman, who trained Chuck Liddell. So, Kenpo is definitely out there representing. So I like that. So wanted to kind of change gears a little bit, get a little bit more focused on your journey. So, getting into the teaching side of it, when did that start for you? And, were you always interested in teaching, or, did a lot of people that I've talked to, they kind of fell into it. Many of them didn't even want to teach and, yet somehow have, made that their life. So, how's the teaching side of it start for you?
Dennis and Sharon Toston, founders of AmeriKick, they were definitely building the company into a franchise when I was young. I told you from day one, I wanted all in on everything, teaching being one of them. So when I was a color belt, young and eager, I want to. Yeah, kid, you'll get your turn, whatever. But they put that idea in the back pocket. And right before my first junior black belt promotion, when I was just like getting done eighth grade and going into that summer, they're like, all right, so what's the deal with next year? I'm like, you know, I'm going to play basketball for high school, this, that. They're like, you know, you know, you can start making money in high school and, you know, you can work and then, you know, we can be your college. We could be your college alternative instead of paying for education. You know, we could be your education and, you know, you're going to own a school one day. You know, you're going to have your own income. So like the seeds were always planted from very, very young. And then when I did get promoted to my first black belt, I come in that next following Monday, all puffy chested as a 13-year-old. And I said, I want to teach. And Sensei Sharon said, go, you got the first class. I've taught every class since. So that was my first class. We just celebrated my 30th anniversary of teaching a couple of days ago.
Oh, very nice.
First
Congrats.
Class I ever taught was Monday, March 13th, 1995. AmeriKick taught me everything. They taught me how to teach. They taught me how to be a manager. They taught me how to own and run a business. 2004, my wife and I, we took over, signed over, made everything ours. And everything's been lovely since, man. So it's the only job I've ever had, Reg. started in 95. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Very nice. I like it. So for someone that is new to getting into teaching, what advice would you give for those new instructors out there?
Passion. You cannot fake or teach passion. If you are passionate about what you do, you leave yourself in a position of you can't be called fake. Somebody may or may not like you, but they will not oversee or overlook your passion. They may not like your style. They may like someone else better. They may not vibe with you. If you're passionate about what you do, nobody will question you as a knowledgeable. Sorry, there's my puppies and guard dogs.
Oh, no problem.
Passion is the key. Talent is a bonus. If I'm better than you at my craft, that's a bonus. If you and I are both passionate, that's seen and known. Everything goes from there. Nobody calls you fake. If you're passionate about what you do, you can't be called fake.
I like it. All right. So we are going to move into our lightning round. You know, like I mentioned before, there's so many things that I wouldn't want to get into, and we could talk all the live long day, but we'll save those for part two and three and 50 and kind of go from there. But we're going to go ahead and move to our lightning round. Got a few little questions for you as we head towards wrapping up. First question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Think style. All right, here we go. Here we go.
You can give me the top five if from anything if you'd like.
Boxing, left cross. I love a left cross. Jiu-jitsu, triangle. I've ran through entire brackets of tournaments with just a triangle. Kenpo. Generically speaking, anything blocking the outside of a right punch. So in particular, my best Kenpo techniques are probably like sleeper, flashing wings, dance of doom, the techniques that have the parry and the option to, you know, parry, check, and wind up that following ridge hand or elbow, or slip it, kind of simultaneous. If you remember, like I said earlier, I'm not a big power hitter. I'm a lightweight. I weigh 155 on a heavy day carrying something on my back. You know what I mean? I'm gonna hit you and I'm gonna crack you. I'm gonna place it perfect and I'm gonna time it perfect. So, long answer, longer, sleeper. Sleeper's my move because I'm going to slip your right punch. I'm not going to crack you with the ridge hand and then go into the choke. I'm just going to slip that right and go bang right into that choke before you even know it. It fits perfect with my boxing, head slipping. It fits perfect with, you know, being lighter and sharper versus bigger and more powerful. So, yeah, long answer, long sleeper.
I like it. I like it. That's one of what I call the Kenpo All-Star techniques. It's in just about every version of Kenpo, at least every version that I've trained. Yeah, you got your sleeper and your five swords and your thundering hammers, techniques like that. So. I like that. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
I'll say long four because I probably didn't like katas or forms until I learned long four. Never enjoyed doing the traditional Kenpo forms, you know. Had to learn them as a student. Can't tell you I enjoyed it. Never enjoyed watching other traditional forms and other styles. I was spoiled as a kid watching people do crazy flips and gymnastics with awesome punch and kick combinations. Like, so that was such a downgrade to me. When I learned long four, it was kind of one of those epiphanies, like, boom, you just learned martial arts. And I feel once I learned that kata, I learned a lot about Kenpo. So that really enhanced my respect for kata alone, made me go back to short one and start practicing short one in my mid late 20s for the first time. Like, okay, let's practice this in detail, in depth. So long four is my favorite kata because that changed my whole outlook on forms in general.
Very nice. Yeah, I think a number of people have said that long four really kind of encompasses all the different aspects of Kenpo. And yeah, that's really, I don't know, maybe the heart or just kind of you know, you want to know Kenpo, then and get you some long pour. So I like that. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Performance, offense, or defense?
Just
no performance.
In a general, or you can split them up if you'd like.
Machete, man. Machete. After 30 years of Arnis training, I can do the same thing with a machete that I could do with a stick. Yeah. Yeah, machete all day. When the apocalypse hits and zombies are running around and we're all out of bullets, I'm well trained with a machete. I could find one at Home Depot, a good one too.
Mm.
Machete nice. All day.
Nice. I like it. All right. Next question. There's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
Ooh. Oh, God. Well, you said fictional or non-fictional?
Yeah.
Hook me up to the Neo Matrix machine, bro. I want to learn every system in the next 6 hours and then fight Morbius. Come on.
Oh, yeah. There's
my fantasy one. I got to go Bruce, not by popular opinion, but I have always questioned, is Bruce Lee the greatest martial artist of all time because of his skill set? Is he the greatest martial artist of time because he's such a cultural bridge? You know, is Bruce Lee Dr. J? But then Michael Jordan's a better version of Dr. J. You know, like, mm-hmm. But Michael Jordan doesn't exist without. Is Bruce Lee Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King, just a voice that people listen to and legends and stories were told because of this remarkable man? And so I got to go Bruce because I think I could take him. So not based off popular opinion, I have so many questions that I think would be answered. And not to question talent or knowledge, just there's so many stories, so many legendary stories. How did he die? Is he still alive?
Mm.
The demons get him. Was it a Tylenol?
Yeah.
The legendary Bruce.
I like it. Yeah. All right. So this last question, I'm still working on how to formulate this, but I'm curious, what is something that inspires you to train? Now, I'm going to kind of clarify this a little bit. So one of the things that is always gets me motivated, always gets me hyped up, the training montage from the movie Rocky IV. So he's out there, he's chopping the wood, he's lifting the rocks, he's running through the snow, the Hearts on Fire song is playing. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that movie, and every single time I see that scene, I'm like, I'm going out to train. I'm going out to the garage. I'm going out to the park. I'm going to the studio. I'm ready to do some training. So for you, what is something, and it could be anything. It could be a movie, a song, a book, a person, anything at all that always motivates you to train.
This in my own life. I've already asked myself this question.
Very nice.
So I told you earlier, that I should have been watching more Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, because when I was a kid and I'm watching all these Van Damme movies and Rocky IV, I'm thinking I can accomplish like an entire life feat in like a 3-minute montage. So I'm thinking, like, if I watch this 3-minute montage, do like 20 push-ups, couple jumping jacks, run up to the corner and back, yeah, I'm winning this tournament this weekend. So what gets me going now, for real, my wife and I, we love sport documentaries. We're both very fond of Kobe Bryant. If I watch a Kobe Bryant documentary and I don't get up and go do something, I'm just going to continuously tell myself how much of a failure I am for the rest of the day, because we all know the Mamba mentality, and we all know that those professional athletes, they work out twice a day. That's why he worked out four times a day. And yeah, if I watch a Kobe montage, whether it's a reel on Facebook or like a documentary on TV, better get up and go do something. Get your butt off that couch.
Very good. I like it. I like it. All right. So we are going to now move into our shameless self-promotion. So now you can plug anything you'd like, or if there's anything that we hadn't covered that you wanted to make sure we get out today, you have the floor. You can say whatever you'd like, and then we will close out from there.
Well, first, Reggie, Open Hands Podcast, like this was a lot of fun. I really, really appreciate the invite. You just shot me a message about a week ago. I think we both felt a great vibe from each other right away. So this was a lot of fun. I do appreciate the invite. So thank you first. My name's Mark Gallagher, AmeriKick Northeast Philadelphia. Like I said, been teaching in Northeast since 1995. Very, very passionate about what I do. You can find us very easily. Facebook, my name, Mark Gallagher, AmeriKick. We also have an Instagram. We have Instagram, which is AmeriKick, 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 NE Philly. And one thing we didn't talk about, we'll save this for the next one. My wife, Alicia, and I, we also have a special needs foundation. It's called the AmeriKick Cares Foundation. We offer and provide martial arts for kids and adults with special needs, ages 7 and up. That is 100% free of charge. There's no registration. There's no monthly. There's no pay for this. It is a 100% free service. It's called the AmeriKick Cares Foundation. We'll chat about that more next time.
Very nice, very nice. I like that. I'll make sure that we get links to those things in the show notes. So yeah, any of those links, make sure to send them to me, and I'll put them in. And yeah, help support a good cause there. So yeah, I thank you for that.
Of course.
Yeah, so I just thank you so much for being on and taking the time to chat with me and share your story and talk some MMA and all this good stuff. So I thank you. We'll definitely have to do this again and get into more stuff as we go along. But yeah, just once again, thank you so much for being on.
Of course, I appreciate your time, Reggie. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.